Prosecutors and politicians have been sounding off about New York's new bail laws, which go into effect on January 1st. They worry too many people accused of serious crimes will be able to reoffend because judges can no longer set bail on most of them. In the second of a two-part series, WNYC's Beth Fertig explores whether these fears are valid.
The new laws mean bail can only be set on violent crimes like rape and murder. But prosecutors say a couple of violent crimes were excluded. For example, a break-in by a burglar while the resident is still at home.
Even if that person has 8 or 10 prior burglaries, they could be a serial burglar, that case is no longer eligible for bail.
Karen Friedman Agnifilo is the chief assistant district attorney at the Manhattan DA's office. There's more, she says. Technically, bail can no longer be set on any misdemeanors or nonviolent felonies. Those offenses don't sound very dangerous, but she says they actually include some very frightening crimes.
You will have domestic violence situations. You'll have stranger assault situations where you can't set bail. Also, all the white-collar offenses will no longer be bail eligible. Cases where people can steal millions and millions of dollars from elderly vulnerable people, from businesses, identity thieves.
And all those defendants will be out on the street, where prosecutors worry they can commit more crimes. But here's the deal. Judges are allowed to set conditions on these suspects if there's a risk of flight. These can include text messages and phone calls reminding them to appear in court. Judges can also order electronic monitoring, and they can release a defendant with supervision, something that's already done in New York City.
How you talk to somebody is how they're going to talk to you. Or somebody.
Ziza Aziza is meeting with 18-year-old Naja Washington, who's accused of a serious crime. Aziza is a peer specialist for the city's supervised release program. She works for the Criminal Justice Agency in Queens, which helps keep track of defendants awaiting trial and also offers them extra services. On this recent visit, she was asking the teen how she copes with anger.
Well, I'll just, like, go to school and argue with somebody or fight it out. Like, I used to fight a lot.
Washington has long, bright red hair and glamorous eyelashes. This fall, she was charged with a violent felony involving a stabbing. She insists it's a case of mistaken identity. Nonetheless, she knows she's not in a good place. She dropped out of high school, and she's willing to talk with Aziza about changing her behavior.
It sounds like you're very conscious and aware of the fact that you have.
I am aware of the fact that I need to change. My mom tells me all the time, she says she's going to feel like I'm going to go to jail or I'm going to, you know, be dead.
Aziza encourages Washington to see a therapist. She isn't ready, but she does start answering questions in a booklet about making positive changes. And she takes the address for a GED program. Most of the 4,500 clients in the city's supervised release program are accused of things like theft and drug offenses. But Washington is in a special track for teens facing much more serious charges, the type of crimes that make prosecutors nervous because some will no longer be eligible for bail. Joanne DeJesus says she can appreciate that concern. She's been running supervised release for the Criminal Justice Agency in Queens ever since it started 10 years ago, and says it's helping clients of all ages.
I've seen them respond really well to social workers. I've seen them build rapport. This is not a probation-like setting. They feel very comfortable. They come in. They really open up about some of the life circumstances that they're going through, and they trust in their social workers after they start meeting more regularly.
And by building trust, she says the program's able to steer them to mental health, housing assistance, and food stamps, the kind of services advocates say can help prevent crime. But these extra services are all voluntary. They can't be mandated pre-trial. The new law does allow judges to set bail on a defendant who's rearrested for a felony or who violates an order of protection, and almost all violent felonies. But unlike most other states, New York doesn't allow judges to make that decision based on whether a defendant is dangerous. They can only consider their risk of flight. Elizabeth Glazer, director of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice, says that doesn't make sense.
The current structure doesn't really permit an approach that's aligned with what risk is.
In New Jersey, which eliminated cash bail 3 years ago, judges conduct risk assessments based on a suspect's criminal history and the seriousness of the charges. They can then hold them in jail or release them with supervision. I asked Glaser if New York's new law will keep the public safe once judges release more defendants, but also give them pretrial supervision.
We do think that these programs have some effect as well on possibilities of reoffending, but that's not their purpose. Their purpose is to stay within the statute, what the legislature has required judges to do, and to get people back to court.
The city's budget for supervised release will triple to more than $100 million next year. But Mayor de Blasio, the governor, and many prosecutors are still calling for changes in the bail laws. They want judges to consider safety, as they do in other states. Public defenders oppose this, however.
We don't have a crystal ball where we can predict what people are going to do in the future.
Lisa Schreibersdorf is executive director of Brooklyn Defender Services. She says life isn't like the movie Minority Report, where humans with special powers help Tom Cruise figure out who's about to commit a crime.
So we've got a third party wearing sunglasses just out the window.
States that do consider whether a defendant is dangerous use algorithms, not superpowers. But Schreibersdorf says algorithms are inherently biased against blacks and Latinos because they're more likely to get arrested in the first place. Experts say New Jersey's version has kept the crime rate stable without causing a greater percentage of black and brown people to be held in jail before trial. But Schreibersdorf doesn't think New York needs to consider danger instead of flight risk if pretrial supervision is well run.
I actually do think it's going to work. I think when everybody understands that paying all the money to put somebody at Rikers Island is not a good use of the funds, whereas you could actually help a person transition their life into success, I think it's important not to think that on January 1st we have to come in with a completed project.
Supporters of the new law also note that everyone is innocent until proven guilty, and numerous studies have found bail winds up punishing the poor, especially minorities, while the rich can afford to walk free. 30-year-old Ziza Aziza knows that from personal experience. Long before becoming a peer supervisor, she says she spent 3 weeks in different jails in California until the charges were dropped.
It is extremely traumatizing. Like, the amount of spiritual pain one can experience while incarcerated can be completely prevented and avoided with the expansion of the bail reform.
With the expansion in January, all sides will be closely watching the courts. They'll be looking at how many people are released and under what conditions. They'll also be watching for any changes in the crime rates. Beth Fertig, WNYC News.
Tomorrow, we'll hear more about the resources needed to monitor defendants awaiting trial.